So we're in the studio. We are joined by Mike, who's come to see us, and we're going to have an interesting conversation. But thank you for joining us. Good morning.
No problem. Nice to be here.
Really good to have you along. And we're going to talk about domestic abuse and your story. And what's really interesting about hearing it from your perspective is it's often we hear about domestic abuse and it's, you know, the women who's been subjected and the man's a perpetrator. And I gather that, you know, male domestic abuse is something that happens a lot, but it doesn't get reported. And why do you think that'll be?
Yeah, well, the statistics, John, are 40% of domestic abuse, the male is the victim, the husband's the victim. But it's shameful to report. If you do try and report it like I did, a lot of the authorities, very sadly, don't take you seriously. So it's very difficult for a man to get heard. It's very difficult for a man to get any respect. And then there's nowhere for a man to go. There's no shelters. There's no refuge. If I get a chance later in the interview, I'll tell you about some of the places someone can go if they're a man and they're having problems with their partner.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a bit more about that. It's really important to have this conversation. So your background then, you described yourself as a normal family man, good career, well qualified. So it sounds like, you know, you have a kind of a good background, a good kind of basis for your life.
Yeah, I had a wonderful life and everything was great. And then things changed when my son was born. My wife changed personality quite a lot. There was quite a few examples. I'll just give one. Quite often in this situation, I was going to work and my wife was looking after her son. And I came home one day and my prized pet, who I'd had for many years, my wife had killed.
And for what reason did she give?
No reason was ever given. It was apparently an accident, and this was an early warning sign to me that something was wrong here. So something was wrong with my wife, and I didn't know what.
How long had you been married at this point? You know, before you thought, oh, something's not right here.
Oh, this was 5 or 6 years into our marriage.
Okay, so prior to that, there was no cause for concern. It was sort of like a good marriage.
No, it was like a switch when our son was born, and then things deteriorated significantly in lockdown.
What do you think made her change as a person?
It's really hard to tell. I suspect there was what's called a personality disorder within my wife all the time, and I never noticed it, or I didn't want to notice it, but it got worse and worse over time. With our son being born, it suddenly started coming along. In lockdown, when my wife wasn't going to work and wasn't meeting other people, she started referring to our son as her son. And then I knew there was a real problem here.
How did that make you feel when you were hearing that?
I didn't know what to do. And that's one reason I'm so keen to talk on the radio like this today. I didn't know where to go for help. I didn't know where to turn. And I didn't know what was happening. What was happening to us here? Why was this taking place? So,
how old was your son at this point? I mean, I'm wondering whether people could put some of it down to postnatal depression or if that's what they were telling you at the time.
It could have been that. It started when our son was perhaps under the age of one. And then as our son got a bit older, and then when lockdown started, things dramatically deteriorated.
That's going to, I suppose, you know, if there's sort of cracks and things happening, lockdown, the fact you're kind of locked down together, that's going to cause those sort of, you know, things to get worse potentially.
Things got worse. As I said, there was no arguments, but there was this possession of our son as my wife's only, nothing to do with me. And then I realized something was very, very wrong. And then the deterioration point came a few months later. Lockdown had ended. My wife ran off with my son and claimed for 10 years she had been a victim of domestic abuse.
And presumably, you know, she made those claims, those allegations that she was a victim. People, you know, there would have been more support for her, you know, like, you know, people would listen to her and things like that. Yeah,
well, in order to see my son, I had to go to what's called family court. And family court, my wife stood up and made these allegations. And so they said, okay, we immediately need to investigate. We're going to stop you seeing your son while investigations take place. So during this whole process, I wasn't allowed to see my son. That then led to issues in the community. People thought I must have done something here. And then for the next 2 years, just a train of horrible false allegations, repeatedly dismissed by court, but repeatedly reproduced, yeah. and then it got worse with my wife starting to involve the police, which was very unpleasant, social services, and then a complete deterioration to very serious allegations.
So these allegations, you know, as a working professional, that's going to have an impact on, I suppose, your employability and how sort of you're seen?
Massively. I don't want to say what I do for a living.
No.
But I'm not allowed to work with those type of allegations. So it disrupted my career. That disrupted my ability to earn a living, and then that disrupted my ability to see my son, because I needed to go to court to win the case.
And of course, you know, not being able to work, and then you have legal fees and things like that. I mean, there's that side of it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, it was devastating on many, many levels. And the hardest bit of all was the community I was in, and who I thought would always support me if something happened. They became very no smoke without fire. And I think if there's one thing I've learned in this process, you've got to be careful with no smoke without fire, because quite often things can be malicious and made up.
Yeah, exactly. It's really beyond a tricky situation for you. I mean, what impact was this having on your mental health? You know, these allegations impacting your being able to work and not being able to see your son. I mean, how was that affecting you?
It affected it an awful lot. There's no question. It completely affected it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I have to be thankful to some local organisations who stepped in. Now, I don't want to name some of the organisations that treated me badly, some of whom are domestic abuse organisations. I just want to point out some that were excellent. So you've got groups like the Woking Lighthouse. They almost immediately identified me, what was going on here. Mm-hmm. They helped me a lot. Woking Food Bank. You've got the various community fridges around.
Yeah.
So that kept me going when I wasn't earning. And also Families Need Fathers, the nearest group to Woking, there isn't one in Woking, I'm afraid, is the Thames Valley group. So if you are being abused as a male, I would recommend joining that group. I think it's £30 a year to join Families Need Fathers. And then they hold Monday night online meetings to help dads in this situation. So without these organisations, I would have been lost.
I mean, yeah, it's how do you begin to kind of unravel that, you know, the impact of those allegations, not being able to see your son, and also dragging it through courts as well. I mean, that's going to have its toll.
It's very, very stressful. I mean, eventually I didn't have any money anymore, so I started representing myself in court. I've kind of got used to doing that now, but the first few times you're in a courtroom, it's very, very stressful. And especially when you've done nothing wrong, you're just trying to see your son.
You're just trying to convince a jury and convince them that, you know, you haven't done anything wrong, you know.
It's a family court judge. Yeah. It's not a jury.
Okay.
So it's a single family court judge. But at the same time, you are having to convince them you've done nothing wrong. So you're having to produce evidence.
And do you have any friends that are supporting you?
I've had two subsets of friends. I've had some friends who've been fantastic. And I've had some friends who've really let me down. And what I've learned to do in this, I think anyone going through a traumatic situation, you've got to just release those friends who let you down. Keep the ones who stood by you, and then build new friendships. Yep.
Absolutely, yeah. There's people who can support you in your life. I think that's so important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got to just look to who's been supportive and reward those.
Yeah, and obviously rumours spreading around, and I mean that's going to be, I don't know, how do you even deal with that? You know, going around the community and people sort of thinking, you know, hearing things and bits of untrue stuff, and you know.
Well, it means a couple of things. The first is I don't walk around my local community anymore.
Okay.
And the second thing it means is I've had to take a job reasonably far away from that community because the community has spread to some of the local workplaces where I would potentially work. So it's very sad like that.
Yeah.
I think a good point to make, John, is that domestic abuse comes in two forms. Typically, when men are the perpetrators, it's violence and it's intimidation, it's threats. So it's physical contact, aggressive. When it's the female that's the perpetrator, it tends to be allegations and slurs. What's a slur? Well, a slur is a rumour that's spread around the community that's false about you. So it's different types of allegations between men and between women. And the way that the system is set up is if allegations are made, the child lives with the mother while they're investigated.
So they're in the favour of a mother's corner, isn't it?
It is very much in the favour of the mother's corner. Okay. I don't want to get into male versus female debates here, but 40% of domestic abuse, the Office of National Statistics data, it's the female that is the perpetrator. So, that's a problem with the current system.
Yeah.
Is that not allowed to be changed if it can be proven that the female is the person leading the abuse and causing the abuse? Can that then not mean the child goes to the father or somebody else?
Well, that can happen. That might happen in my situation. I don't know yet. But it happens in less than 1% of situations. Mm-hmm. The court will take the view that the mother is essential to the child's life, so the mother will get multiple opportunities. If the father does things wrong, the father will not get multiple opportunities. That's the unfairness of the system.
Well, Mike, we're going to talk some more in a bit. We'll take a break from our travel, but I want to sort of get more into this because it's such an important conversation, and hearing it from your views and hearing your story as well, I think hopefully would help a lot of people. So we'll come back to you in just a few minutes' time, if that's okay. Thank you for that. So, Mike, our guest on the programme today.
It is Owner by Stormzy, and we are right now hanging out with Mike. What do you think how we can improve the system then?
It's a difficult question. That it needs a lot of changes. The system for how men can report domestic abuse, and also for how men can secure good access to their children, even perhaps equal access to the mother. It's a difficult question because the politicians don't want to touch it, because it's seen as a bit of a toxic issue. So, I mean, what is needed really is family court reform. We need to move more to the system that you find in Scandinavia, where when a couple sadly breaks up and there's children, the assumption is that the children get shared between both parents equally. That doesn't exist at all in Britain at the moment. The system is 93% of awards to the mother, 6% of wards to shared care, about 2% to equal shared care, that's what I got to, and then 1% to live with father. For live with father, there has to be some very, very extreme behaviours by the mother. And I think that's the other point to make here, is the mother is allowed to make lots of false allegations against the father in a family court. And that's the only real arena on earth, I think, where one person can make blatantly false allegations against the other.
Why is it like that? Why do you think it is weighed in the mother's favour?
It's a legal reason. It all boils down to something called parental responsibility, which is where you are legally responsible for a child. The mother acquires parental responsibility through the process of birth or caesarean, whatever. The father only secures that right if he's on the birth certificate or has been to court to obtain a certificate of paternity. So the right from the start, the system is linked towards the mother. Then you've got issues such as breastfeeding when the child is young. That's obviously something only the mother can do, so that leans young awards towards the mother. And that just seems to have become the culture.
And not seeing your son for a whole year, I mean, have you had any contact? Do you get sort of letters, phone calls, anything like that? Is that sort of thing happening? Or?
Legally, while these new allegations are going through, and I think they're all going to be dismissed again, I hope they are, while they're going through, I speak to my son on video call every night, and I see him under supervised conditions. I think this is terrible because this is the second time I've gone to court and there's been no leeway second time round for the fact the mum made false allegations the first time round. So the system's very stacked against the father.
And for your son's point of view, you know, growing up, not having you directly in his life every day, you know, that father figure, I mean, that's going to have an impact, isn't it?
Yeah, that shows in various reports that have been done about my son.
Are you aware, has he asked for you?
Yes, he has. In reports, he's asked to go back to as it was before with equal shared care. But the system is, another fault with the system is the time things take. So it can take a year to put things through for allegations to be cleared. That's a year of your young child's life where they're not seeing one parent. So it's terrible.
And do you worry, you know, about the impact and how this is affecting your son and his safety? Is that something that's concerned?
I worry all the time. I don't always know where he is. I don't know if he's safe. The mother won't always bring him to contact when she's told to. She won't always let me speak to him by video call. For example, I haven't spoke to my son since Thursday. I'm supposed to speak to him every night. So it's worrying. It's very worrying. I mean, this has got to be decided now by
the judge. Does she keep you updated what he's up to?
No, not at all. This is a tactic. This is a trick. This is a frustration tactic to prevent me seeing him. So it's just something I've got to deal with until this gets back into court.
So, I mean, what would you like to see happen? You know, how would you like this to kind of conclude? What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Family court reform has needed to take place for many years. No politician wants to do it, but changes need to take place. We need to move to a Scandinavian type system where equal shared care is assumed.
Yeah,
and we need to move to a system like some other countries have, where if the mother makes false allegations or repeatedly makes false allegations, there's a penalty. So perhaps you could allow the mother once out of anxiety or whatever to make things up about the father, but to do it in my case 15-20 times,
the pattern emerging here,
that needs to be cut out.
And you mentioned, you know, the sort of how this all started after your son was born and killing of your goldfish and other bits that sort of built on from that. But what was the, I mean, I imagine kind of walking away and realizing there's a problem, actually taking action, that would have been quite a hard step, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's a very hard step. I should have done it sooner. But I think one of the issues is men don't want to do that. You're going to have to change everything about your life.
When you were in that situation, at that time, did you know what to do?
Not at all. I really didn't. I always thought if something went wrong, I could just go to the police. I didn't realise that the police are not the people to go to if you're in this situation.
So what was the last straw? What was it that made you think, okay, I need to get out of this relation, you know, I need to get out? What was it that led to that?
Well, she accused me of very serious domestic abuse. And it was completely unrealistic domestic abuse. Lots of vague allegations, but there was one that was a specific date, time, place. And I was in a different city that day. So, I mean, I realised at that point, I have to do something about this.
So what did you do initially when you thought, right, I need to get out of this relationship? What did you leave or did you go?
No, she left.
She left, okay.
She left with the son. I contacted a solicitor and began family court proceedings. That's pretty much all a father can do. But you need to be careful going to solicitors because they will take all your money and they will not particularly care about you. So the advice I would suggest is when this happens, you need to join something, an organisation. Yep. The best one is a national one called Families Need Fathers, and they will guide you through their local groups, what to do, how to submit application scores.
And we talked about, you know, the effect this is having on your mental health, and as a man, you know, we don't like to talk about things, but actually, Andy's Man Club in Woking, this has been invaluable, hasn't it?
Yeah, this has been great for me because I've needed to talk to people, and I've needed to form new friends, and I've needed to find a way to deal with this issue. So I've gone to Andy Man Club in Knapp Hill in Woking, and I have found them excellent. I speak to other men. I speak to men who have different issues. I have speak to men who are well past any issues, having a great life, and I just gain strength from it. So I really do advise that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going for a lot of things, and you know, that sort of environment, it's non-judgmental. You can say what you got to say, or importantly, if you don't want to talk, you don't have to. You can pass the ball on and not say anything. It's kind of very, very kind of like how you, you know, very sort of user-led and peer-to-peer support, which is yeah, really valuable, I think, for a lot of people.
That's right. I think when something traumatic happens in your life as a man, like has happened to me here, it's the ability to be mentally health aware that becomes very important, because it's not just a battle to have my son in my life. It's a battle for me to stay mentally well. And Andy's Man Club is excellent for that.
And that's important, though, that your mind's in the right place for, you know, fighting this and getting the outcome you want, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so if any men are listening and maybe, you know, they're in a similar situation, maybe they're noticing things aren't right and, you know, there's children involved and it's caused, you know, what advice would you give?
I think you want to take things slowly. You want to look at perhaps counselling or some sort of family mediation. But at some point, you're probably going to have to deal with this. So I mean, I probably hid from the warning signs for too long. It's a nightmare, really. I had a very nice life, and there was something funny with my wife, and I didn't want to tackle that because it was going to interrupt what was a nice life. But there comes a point where you have to,
yeah. You can't hide from it. Yeah.
No.
Okay, well, Mike, thank you so much for coming down and telling us your story.
Thank you. It's a very difficult subject, and if anyone is going through this situation, make sure you do reach out. Because hearing your story there sounds very touchy. It's not easy to just come in and just speak about it. And we definitely very appreciate it.
Brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah. And thank you. And thank you for coming to see us. So Mike there, telling his story of domestic abuse from the man's point of view, something which doesn't get talked about enough. So really important to have that conversation. And help is out there. There's lots of organisations that we talked about. Andy's Man Club meets at the Vine Centre every Monday night, apart from bank holidays, from 7 o'clock. And you just turn up and get the support there if you need it.